And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me tonight will be David Holly. This is another episode of the FFC Weekly Roundup. We'll be focusing on several phone-related topics to discuss and debate, along with hearing from you, the listener, as we have a section of the show now called Ask the Co-Host, which I posted on the Facebook page for the show, and we'll be talking about your topics as well. We'll, as always, be previewing the match, which is against Bristol City, at the end of the show, and we also will be having our new segment called What the Managers Are Saying. I'll be reading quotes from both managers heading into this match, and each one of them have some very interesting things to say going into the match on Saturday. I look forward to it. So as I wait for David to join me, and it looks like he's on with me now, he's about to go someplace else, but David's here, so let's bring him on. Mr. Holly, how you doing?
Hi, I'm here to bring some joy and cheer to your evening with my black cloud hanging over my head and my depressive mood.
Oh, David, well, I hope I can cheer you up a little bit. I'm sorry to hear that. But
I'm hoping I can make everyone miserable, Russ.
David, okay. Well, this should be an interesting show. I look forward to doing this with you, my friend. Let's try to lighten the mood a little bit. I know how much you enjoy trivia. I'm going to give you a couple of trivia questions. Sound good?
My brain is fuzzled this week, so I'll probably be rubbish, but fire away.
No, you're going to be good at this one because I know that you have been good with capitals and states, so I think this is an easy one for you. I live
okay.
in Massachusetts. The state next to me is the smallest state in the United States. Name the state and its capital.
That would be Rhode Island and Providence.
Good job, David. Very good job. I thought that would be
that's an easy
not
one.
A too
You're
difficult.
Right.
Yeah, that was
that
an
was
easy
an
one.
Easier one yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm going to give you one that's a little bit more difficult, okay? This involves a president and someone running for president right now. So this involves Bill and Hillary Clinton. They both went to the same law school. Do you know the name of the law school?
Oh, that's a good one. Well, this the two big names that come to mind is like Harvard and Yale, isn't it? Of the two kind of.
It's one of them.
It's one of. I know it won't be MIT because that's not a law school. I think they were at Harvard, but I could be wrong.
It was Yale, David.
Oh, well, it was 50-50, but I know they met there because she was like something like Hillary Rodham or something, I think. Or
correct.
Something. Is
correct.
That right, yeah? Yeah?
Yes, she was Hillary Rodham. They actually met at law school at Yale.
I always get the two confused. I must admit, Harvard and Yale. That's actually probably the next thing I should learn, the Ivy Leagues or something, because that's something that comes up as well, and as you noticed from my little co-host chat before the show started, actually a very interesting fact that our friend Scott is an expert on Egyptology, apparently.
I
so
saw
I'll
that.
I'll have to see about that because I'm rubbish on Egyptology. We had some questions the other week in the Quiz League, and all I could say was Ramesses II, and it was someone I'd never heard of. So I'd be interested to speak to Scott about that. But anyway, the days of Fulham's Egyptology are over. Mohamed Al-Fayed has sold up, and we now have someone else in charge, and things aren't going swimmingly at the moment. We're having a bit of a blip, and for me, it's been a big downer the last couple of weeks. It really has. I don't know.
Okay.
It was one thing being rubbish every week. We got used to it, but we actually had a bit of hope for a few weeks, and then we've been a bit rubbish, and I don't know, a combination of factors for me, travelling up and down to London, working long hours. And Fulham's been like a real disappointment for me so far this year. It's really hit me hard, much harder than I expected. Really depressed me actually, especially on Wednesday night as well, going out of the cup in that fashion. And of course, results, you know, having to scrabble a draw against Burton and the disappointment away at Wigan of, you know, not getting anything there. And it really has been, you know, a disappointing couple of weeks, really. It seems to me. And we'll go into it in detail in a minute. But, you know, Slavisa's tactics have been worked out. And at the moment, he doesn't really have a plan B. And, you know, all these complaints you had before about Kit. Kit played the diamond every week. It got sussed out. We got nullified. after Kit's honeymoon period. And, you know, it's a little bit like that with Slavisa. He needs to come out with something radical out of the box, I think. We need a bit of a change around somehow. And, you know, because we can't bring in new personnel now, not really, not unless there's any bargain free transfers out there. And you don't normally get many bargain free transfers. But, you know, he needs to pull something out of the box tomorrow, because a disappointing result again tomorrow, you know, and really the wheels are starting to fall off. And, you know, I actually went to click a defeat on your survey, and I clicked draw by mistake. So, you know, maybe that's an omen. I don't know, but we'll see.
Okay. Very good there, David. Listen, we're going to get into it. I understand the disappointment lately. Listen, I've been disappointed as well, and very good point by you. It's going to be very interesting to see how he adjusts now. You mentioned, Kit, that it was a very interesting point with Kit, because he stuck with a diamond. Well, Jokanović stick with a 4-2-3-1. Will he change the players around in different positions? We could definitely talk about that. Will he bring in other players that have been sitting? Will he start other players? So there are things he can do. And I have a feeling we will be getting into a great deal of that during the show. But let's start here. I've got a bonus topic for us, because we do have some team news. And I'm going to read the team news to you. So I thought we would start there before we go into the Cottage Talk roundtable. So I'm going to read this to you right from the Fulham website. So Vici Jokanović will be without Tomas Kalas for the visit of Bristol City to Craven Cottage on Saturday. The on-loan defender has joined two previous absentees on the treatment table, but Sonny Aluko and Chris Martin will be available following injury and EFL Cup ineligibility, respectively. Quote, this is from Slavisa, "We lost Ryan Fredericks, we lost Floyd Ayite, and Tomas Kalas," Jokanović explained. "They're not going to be available for this week in front of us. We won't have the opportunity to use these three players. Sonny Aluko is okay, and the other players are ready for the fight." And then it goes a little bit further on. We're going to make changes," he stated. "For me, it was the perfect moment to use different players. This is about the last match, like I used in the two games before in the cup. I put people in the field who I believe could win the game. And this is our intention for all the games. And, yes, now we're going to try with some different people and try to win the game, something we didn't do before." Okay. Those are the quotes from Slavisa along with some team news. The big news, David, is that Tomas Kalas will not be available for the match tomorrow. Thoughts on the team news?
Well, that one, in a way, makes it a bit of a simple selection, in a way, doesn't it? Because obviously there's been this last few weeks, this very interesting selection situation where, of course, our friend Maddle found himself on the bench and not even first choice last game, which was quite surprising, really. But obviously that, I think, tomorrow is pretty much a fait accompli. So any hope I had of a radical change to a 3-5-2 is probably out the window anyway. But I think at the back, it's going to pick itself, really, that we'll see Sigurdsson and Maddle, I would imagine, as our centre defenders. So in that respect, it's simple. Chris Martin will come back. Aluku is available again, obviously. Aiti's not. Fredericks, we know, is not available at the moment. He's just started. He's been out in Florida, of all places, hasn't he?
I saw that.
Yeah, I don't know if he's been having a holiday or rehab or whatever, but he's ready to start training, I think, next week. So, you know, potentially not too far from a comeback now, which is good. But we still have too many midfielders, to use that term loosely, because, you know, we have, you know, plenty who can play the holding role. We have at least four who can play that holding role. Johansson, Tony Cliff, as long with the usual incumbents of Parker and McDonald. And, of course, in the attacking midfield players, you know, we have Aluku back, of course. We have Kearney. We have Cabano. We have Yozabed. And I'm sure I've missed someone else. And, of course, people like Christensen, of course, are somewhere in the mix there as well. And then up front, of course, plenty of choice technically as well with Martin Smith, Woodrow. And, of course, you know, our friend from the other team in Fulham who scored the other night, who's probably back to the bench. But yeah, that's right. I wanted you to say it because my pronunciation, I wasn't confident. So I'd let you do the Goldman first, risk the Goldman.
Thank you. Thank you.
But that's nice. That's my pleasure. But yeah, I mean, I think the hope of a radical change is probably out the window with with Callas not being available. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens now then, you know, if these two play well together and we get a result, what will happen with Callas? Will he have to wait his turn? Will he be straight back in the team? Will he go to right back even as, you know, as been mooted but never happened? So I don't think we're going to see anything too devastating tomorrow now, not really in terms of selection. I mean, he's hinted at making changes, but as you said, that was more what he did in the week, really, changing it around radically for the Bristol City match, which, to be fair, did work against Middlesbrough. We got the result there, but Lightning didn't strike twice, and, you know, it leaves a bit of a sour taste in your mouth, really, that we've gone out in what really was a very winnable match, you know, the chance of progressing in the Cup. Okay, well, you'd have had to face one of your favourite teams in the next round, I believe, but, yeah, it would have been lovely to have a chance to beat them, of course, even though they're a bit of a bogey team. But nevertheless,
sure,
a defeat is a defeat. And, you know, whether we put out, a team of kids, our best team or whatever, it's still a defeat, unfortunately. And, you know, if you're a Bristol City fan and if you're Lee Johnson, you're going to say, well, you know, regardless of who was playing, you're going to say, look, we beat them at their patch in the week. We can do it again on Saturday. And they're going to come into the match with confidence. You know, perhaps, just perhaps, they may play a more attacking style than maybe some teams do, which might help us a little bit. Who knows?
But still, what's interesting, David, and we're going to get to this in a little bit. I have some quotes from Lee Johnson that's going to back up what you just said. Okay, so let's hold off on that, and also we're going to be talking about. I definitely want your thoughts on the approach in the Bristol City Cup match, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. I want to go back to you because I want to talk a little bit about the fact that Mattel's now in with Sigurdsson. And it's funny because I remember over the summer, Savisa talking about that he wanted another center back. Well, I think this is probably part of the reason because obviously you deal with injuries. But Mike said something interesting to me, and I want to get your thoughts on this. On a prior show, you know, he said to me, this was actually last night, we're talking about Sigurdsson, Callas. He thinks Callas has been our best central defender. And then you have Mattel, and he thinks Mattel has been good for us. But he believes, and I want your thoughts on this, that Callas and Sigurdsson are a cut above. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I haven't seen Sigurdsson play yet, actually, but by one reason
so
or other.
Can't judge yet.
You know, I don't want to sit on the fence and get accused. Mike will be on in a minute. He'll break off his romantic dinner or whatever he's doing to phone up and say, stop sitting on the bloody fence, David. But I haven't seen him. And the thing is, he might be right, but without seeing it for myself, it's impossible to say. However, I'd be surprised that, you know, Michael Maddle, who we were mooting as our, you know, best central defender not so long ago, potentially, being a cut above what we had. And that, I think, is probably fairly safe to say that he was a cut above the ones we had last year.
Right, and that was his point, David. Mike's point. Mike's point was that Mattel was a cut above our central defenders from last season, but he, you know, and he has done well with us, but he believes that Callas and Sigurdsson could be a higher level than Mattel.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, obviously, it's a great situation to be in, I would imagine. It really is. It'd be sad if Mattel is actually the one who misses out because the other two are better. I mean, it's a nice situation to be in, of course. It really is. But, you know, I think Mattel is someone I'd like to see figuring somehow. And so, you know, if they are all that good, maybe we should really look at a three central defenders kind of lineup once they're all fit. But, you know, I'll have a look for myself and I'll report back in due course.
Oh, definitely, David. I definitely want your thoughts on that because I found what Mike said last night very interesting. And Mike is not down on Michael Mattel. He just is very high, especially on Callas and then on Sigurdsson. All right, David, let's now move into the Cotter's Talk Roundtable. I'm going to try to get you off of the fence on several of these topics. Let's start here, okay, because this has been the topic, you know, basically this is the thing that we definitely need to talk about. So here's the question. Do you think you have seen enough to say that we lack the strikers we need to score goals this season? Do you think you've seen enough, or the follow-up question would be, if you don't think we've seen enough, when will you know one way or another?
Well, I think, you know, at the moment we're at a situation where we have made all the signings we can until the next transfer window. And, you know, that was my biggest concern, obviously, going into the start of the season, that losing the two strikers we had, that Smith and Woodrow weren't going to be enough. Obviously, you know, Chris Martin is someone who has proven quality at this level. And so, really, you know, a lot of pressure on him maybe, but nevertheless, he should be doing the job. But if he's not firing, then, you know, we do have a bit of a problem if we're not scoring the goals, because we are a team that's not going to score a lot of goals at the moment. You know, our shots on target has been pretty pitiful the last few games. It really has. Home matches and, you know, things like, you know, in the order of one or two shots, very, very poor. So I think whilst, you know, we have an issue with the strikers, it's also the creativity at the moment. We're not creating the chances. I think, you know, every goal scorer, every striker has their ratio. You give Corley Woodrow enough chances, he'll score. If you can create 50 chances a match, Corley will get goals all the time. You know what I mean? But if you're only going to create one or two chances, then you're going to struggle. So I think we should, in theory, have the strikers, because between Chris Martin and support from others and attacking midfielders, we should be able to do it. But something isn't firing. So I think the problem is something else other than the strikers out and out.
We're going to talk about that in one second, my friend. But, you know, you're a good judge of talent, good judge of what Fulham need, what they're missing, and what they have. So we're talking about Chris Martin. You can also throw in Paez on as well, and I probably said it wrong again. That's probably another goalman. But when do you think you'll have a good indication, for you, who judges these players and is a good judge, when do you think you will know that we either have the strikers or we don't have the strikers and we might have to buy one in January?
Well, if in January we're in a situation where we need one, then probably it's going to be a bit late, to be honest with you, isn't it? I mean, for me, the problem is not creating the chances more than, you know, the strikers themselves. So at the moment, you know, I don't think we can go out and buy more strikers. Even if we could, I'm not sure if that's going to solve the problem.
Okay.
We're just going to replace light with light, really. You know, if they're not getting the service, they're not getting the chances. It's not like Chris Martin is missing lots of chances. I know he's missed a couple, but he's not missing a lot. So, no, I think, you know, the question is something else other than strikers is what we need.
Okay, and that's going to lead to my second topic, which you have pretty much already answered, Dave. I was just about to ask you, which is more responsible for our lack of goals this season? Would it be the service to our strikers up front or the finishing from the opportunities created? It sounds like, to me, you're talking about the service up to the strikers, Chris Martin, Matt Smith, Colley Woodrow. It sounds like, to me, you're talking about the midfield. I actually talked to Reese Curtis about this, and he was adamant about the lack of service up to the strikers in the Wigan match. You know, again, he actually had some very, very interesting statistics to back it up. So it sounds like to me you were talking about the problems that we're having with the service comes from the midfield. So let me ask you this in a couple different ways. First of all, the problem is in the midfield, but I want to ask you, is it twofold? Is it the players out there, and also is it possibly players out of position? And I'm going to talk about Tom Kearney.
Well, Tom Kearney, that's the age-old enigma. But, you know, you say the midfield, I think it's a wider problem than that, really.
Okay.
It really is, because, you know, it's not just about the midfield. It's also about, you know, the attacking width from the defence and everything. You know, it really is. For me, that's you know, it's a whole team thing, a holistic thing. It's not just one position problem. I mean, Kearney, obviously, we put a lot of eggs in our basket with Kearney, and other teams do a job on Kearney. You know, you could mark him out of the game to a point, because he's very one-footed. You kind of know which way he's going to go with the ball always. He's not going to switch on his right foot and put it past you. He's always going to go on his left foot. And so someone who's, you know, a half-decent defender or man marker can do a job on Kearney, as we've seen lately. But it's about everything. I think the system is, you know, at the moment we're not, you know, we should have the width because we got five across midfield, but we don't have the width. The fullbacks aren't providing enough going forward. You know, when you're playing, you know, it's a bit of a broken record, but we're playing these kind of, you know, wide men who like to cut in, the Tom Cairneys, and also, you know, it's been the same on the other side. You know, when Aiti was starting the season, he ended up in the middle all the time. Him and Cairney were almost crossing over at times. You know, you would find Cairney almost getting as far as the inside left and Aiti to inside right, completely opposite from where they started just about. And in a situation like that, the only thing you can do for width is have fullbacks who can get forward. And, you know, we've seen that, I think, relatively satisfactorily anyway, at least with Malone and Sessegnon on the left-hand side. But on the right, Odoi, he hasn't cut it for me. He really hasn't. I mean, I said
can I ask you a
week,
question,
but,
David?
Yeah.
David, let's talk about Odoi, because this is something that Reese and I were talking about on the show Sunday night. Odoi is not doing that, and you're right about that. But he noticed in the Wigan match, David, that Odoi would get up to a point and stop. So I'm going to ask you a question. Do you think he is being instructed not to go forward because of lack of cover from, say, Cairney on the right because he needs to get back? Do you think that they don't have the same relationship on the right that they have on the left, meaning that if it's Malone and Sessegnon and, say, Cabano and Naite, there's enough cover going back and forth. They're helping each other out. But Cairney and, say, Odoi's not getting that type of cover, and he might be afraid or might be instructed not to go any further because he needs to get back. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, if that is the case, obviously, it kind of makes the mockery of signing an apparently an upgraded right back on Jazz Richards who can get forward and, you know, and add to the attack, because what's the point then? You know, Jazz Richards didn't get forward. I know he wasn't that great in defence, but I haven't seen Odoi being, you know, the best defender I've ever seen either. You know, he's defending at the moment. He's, you know, on a par with even Fredericks, I think. You know, it's controversial perhaps,
right,
but I haven't seen outstanding defending of him. Okay, he's been okay, but getting forward, he's been pretty non-existent, really. And at the moment, I'd rather have Fredericks in the team, even though, you know,
no,
he gets injured and
I understand
he struggles to play 90 minutes. At least he gets forward. So, you know, You always, most good teams, they have a fullback and go forward, and that's where, you know, we've got two people sitting in front of the back four in Parker and McDonald most weeks. Their job is to help, you know, adapt the shape when you are attacking and defending. When you have to get back, you know, the centre backs will go across to start to cover the gap, and one of those two will sit in the middle. And we've seen McDonald, even when there wasn't a sending off, we've seen him coming between, you know, the back two, you know, to pick up the ball. He's been playing almost like he takes the ball from like a position of a third central defender almost. And, you know, that's, you can't sort of really, you know, have a team on the fact that, you know, Cairney's not that good getting back and playing a defender who's just going to sit back and do nothing. You know, that's just counterproductive, it really is.
Sure.
I mean, you know, it's the same really on both sides of the pitch, I think. And I think it's more down to Odoi's, you know, abilities or whatever. I mean, you know, the way that he was talked about before the season was that he was going to make everyone else look slow, and he hasn't. I don't think he's any slouch, but there's no great pace. He hasn't got the pace of someone like Fredericks. And for
okay.
me, you know, I answered the question that Briefcase Ben set last week, and out of him so far, he has actually been my biggest disappointment. You know, he did that touch against Newcastle, which gave him all this acclaim. But what really has he done since? You know, he
right.
hasn't really offered as much of an upgrade on what we had last year.
No,
okay,
David,
he hasn't,
David, I,
he hasn't given away
I understand
goals
that, but
initially,
I just,
but he's not
right.
he's not really offered much going forward at all.
Well, I'm just asking the question. I don't have the answer, but I'm just asking the question to you with someone that I value his opinion, and this is something that we talked about on a prior show. Could he be instructed to only go up to a certain point because it looks like he almost stops? And on the other side, you don't have Sessegnon or Malone stopping, but for some reason, Odoi is stopping. And again, you have Cairney in this last match is on that side. I think you're going to agree with me that part of the problem, David, and this is just my opinion, is that that Tom Kearney is a waste on the right and should be central. Would you agree with that? Could that be part of our issues with service?
Well, we've been saying that all the time about Kearney, though, haven't we? That, you know, it's really the ideal situation is to have him in the middle because, you know, he can be more dangerous there. When he's coming in from the wing, he's always going kind of the same way. But when he's in the middle, he has, I suppose, the potential to bring people into play on both sides of the pitch. So I totally agree with that. And, I mean, the fact that we have got people who tend to play in a wide position, a pacey sort of players, you know, it
right.
does beg the question, why doesn't, you know, Kearney play in the middle and people like Aiti or Aluku?
Aluku over on the right and the left, yeah.
Or Cabanas, of course. Why they not play in these wider positions?
Sure.
Especially
no,
if they,
it's a good point.
If they play, well, either if they play in their natural side, but even if they don't play on their natural side, I mean, because they at least offer that more pace, they are workers, if nothing else. They are grafters, I think.
Yep.
Especially, you know, Aluku has been a grafter, if nothing else. You know, maybe he lacks a bit in quality, but he's definitely a grafter, and he will be the one who will run back and try and help out. Whether he's a liability, sometimes you don't want these people coming back. they turn out to be worse than staying up front because they give away free kicks and stuff. But, you know, I think we saw Aiti being quite successful in the first game, especially coming back and helping out and, you know, helping the left back out. And so, you know, leave Kearney up in the middle somewhere and let you know, someone else do that job. But fullbacks, they are your only source of really, you know, of width and overlap. And you've got to get them forward
with you,
in
Dave.
The modern game. You've got to get them forward. And Adoy certainly hasn't been doing that. And a few times he has got forward, his final ball quality hasn't been good enough.
I can't argue with you there, David. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, again, I'm just, you know, listen, I'm just watching a replay. You guys are watching it live. And I just find it interesting that Reese in the Wigan match was just focusing on the fact that Adoy would just stop to a point. And he was mentioning to me that he thought that potentially part of the reason could be either instructed to play it that way or was afraid that he needed to get back because he wasn't really getting cover from Kearney. So that was the only reason why I want to bring it up, because it is also about the bigger picture, David, of the lack of service. I want to go to one other area where I think could potentially be a problem. I want to get your thoughts on it because Mike and I have been talking about this as well. So he actually put up a quick Twitter poll, and I want to get your thoughts on it. He did this today. Interested to know if Parker and McDonald should play together for Fulham in central midfield on Saturday. He did this poll for an hour. There are 104 votes, and Parker and McDonald got 38%. Parker and another got 21%. McDonald and another got 37%, and four said neither should start. So I want to ask you, David, because we're talking about service, and you say it's a bigger issue than just, say, the midfielders. Well, I want to focus on the central midfielders. Do you think potentially playing Parker and McDonald together is a problem?
Potentially, yes, it is a problem because, you know, I haven't been too impressed with how it works. They are, to a point, very similar kind of players in the way they play. And, yes, they are kind of playing in that similar role where they're there to screen the back four and pick up the ball and distribute and play it into people in more attacking positions. But they are a little bit much of a matchless. But the trouble is, I mean, there's been, in the last 3 years or whatever, since he's been here, there's been this kind of undercurrent by a few to get Parker out of the team that, you know, he's passed it and everything. He goes around in circles, whatever. But, you know, he still is, you know, probably by far one of our best players. He still puts his neck on the line. I need to put his balls on the line, but put his neck on his line, you know, because,
yes.
You know, he's, what is he, 35, 36 now? Probably a multi-millionaire, I would imagine, yeah? He's got kids and wife and everything who's entourage following him around all the time. He doesn't need to do this anymore, really. He can put his feet up and, you know, live a very comfortable life the rest of his life without ever having to work again. Most certainly, you know, TV punditry and everything else. He doesn't need to do this, but he does. And he puts his neck on the line still. He throws himself into tackles, you know, that lesser men would shudder at. And this isn't about money, I don't think. This guy loves playing football. He's committed to the
cause.
He does. And it's very hard to sort of make an argument about someone like that not being in the team, especially, you know, regardless of his age, really, I should say. But, you know, he brings a lot. He does bring a lot to the team. But the problem is we've signed McDonald as a kind of a class central midfielder. But is there room for both of them in the team? And I don't know. I haven't seen anyone else who I would have, I'd say, I wouldn't rather have any of the others. I mean, out of the ones we've got in that position, I think they probably are the best two.
Okay.
I'm reserving judgment on Johansson, and we haven't seen enough of him. Tunnicliffe, a bit hot and cold, can be reckless. You know, has the energy, but not enough class about him. Parker still has the class. And McDonald plays the game, you know, perhaps a bit leisurely at times, but he has a certain amount of class about the way he plays as well, I think. You know, he seems to be, he's not a hurried player, really. He strokes the ball around. He's backwards and forwards, but without so far being too devastating. But I don't think Tunnicliffe can upgrade on that. Johansson, I'm not sure. Slavicic obviously doesn't at the moment because he hauled him off after, you know, a very short time a couple of weeks back. So in this formation, it's hard to argue who could play there. Maybe Christensen, perhaps, but instead of which one, I don't know. Because Christensen is wasted when he's put out in these wing positions or wide positions, most certainly. And he's not going to get in a more attacking role. We saw him in that ridiculous experiment where he played just behind the striker last season. God
yeah.
knows what was going on there. That really was a weird one. So I don't know. I don't think there is a better combination at the moment, but I'm not sure whether the combination suits us. And as I said, if you know, I would be minded to throw it all out the window and go to a 3-5-2 kind of scenario. Certainly three at the back and two wing backs, and then what you do with the rest of them is kind of negotiable, really, because maybe Chris Martin doesn't want to play with someone else, so you'd actually have like a 3-5-1-1 almost.
Right.
So that allows you to have three, you know, central midfield players, of which one can be defensive and two attacking, or two defensive and one attacking, and a cam as well on top of that, and the width from the wide player. So you've got potentially places for one, two, or even three people in there, like of the likes of Yozabed, Aluku, Aiti, Cabano, to run, you know, run wherever they want to run in the central midfield area. And I would certainly have a look at that again and revisit that once we have all three top central defenders fit again. Because I think, and also I suppose when Ryan Fredericks is fit, because he's, you know, that suits him.
I agree, David.
Because at the moment, I can't really see how to change the formation we have now with the players we have. You know, we could go to a straight 4-4-2, but then we'd end up with, you know, Chris Martin playing up front with somebody he doesn't want to play up front with. Two central midfielders would probably still be Parker and McDonald. Kearney's still on the wing, and God knows who would go on the left. And so I don't really see where we're going with it. So I think it might be time for radical change.
No, very interesting, David. That's why I'm glad that we're having this conversation, because we're trying to figure out and discuss how do we fix this problem. And there are several ways, like you mentioned, possible formation change. I'm talking about possible changing positions with Kearney, you know, being more central. Also, potentially changing one of the central midfielders. Again, listen, I'm just saying I watched the League Cup match. I know it's a League Cup match, but I was impressed by Johansson. I thought he played fairly well, but it's only one match. So I'm thinking maybe that's something to look at. But there's definitely something not clicking, and Savica needs to figure out how to make it click, because right now it's not. So that's why I wanted to have this discussion, my friend. All right, real quick, one final topic. I just want to get your thoughts on this. Before the League Cup match began, did you approve or disapprove of the approach by Slavica in regards to the starting 11? Like you mentioned, he basically played a similar lineup that he did in the other two League Cup matches. 11 changes. Did you approve of that?
Well, it's hard to disapprove because it worked before. I think it was. For me personally, I would have probably not done it because I'm a mercenary sod and I want to win every game. You know, I'm like that with everything I do. I'm not I don't take defeat very well, you know. My quiz league, I wanted to win every game. I'm in a new tennis league actually as well, and I've just won my group. I won all three matches in my tennis group, all in straight sets as well. Because when I do something, I have to win. Unfortunately, that's the sort of person
I understand
I am.
That, David.
It doesn't always win me friends, unfortunately. You win games and you win quizzes and you win stuff, but you don't always win friends. But I want to win, and I want to win the League Cup and the FA Cup and the World Cup and everything, every other cup you can win. You know, I want to take it seriously. So I'm not per se in favour of wholesale changes. I understand the need to rotate at times to give people a rest selectively, but not wholesale changes. So I'm against it. But I understand why it happened, because he did it before and we got through before, so it was wholly expected. But, you know, it's obviously now, and I'm talking from hindsight, it's easy to talk from hindsight, but, you know, it went wrong, the wheels fell off this time, it didn't work, and we're out of the cup from, you know, the easiest route to get to Europe, remember, easiest route to get to Wembley as well. Most people listening to this show here, if not all of them literally, would never have seen Fulham at Wembley. You know, we've had one opportunity to be at Wembley, 1975 FA Cup final. Many, many people who listen to our show, it's outside of their lifetime. I don't even know our co-host. I think we're all just about old enough, the co-host, to have seen that. But, you know,
sure.
Wouldn't it be fantastic to see Fulham get to Wembley? You know,
of course.
Even if we were to lose, but at least we could say we got there. Like the European Europa League final, we got there. We were there, you know. We achieved something.
Yep. Absolutely. I see where you're going.
The League Cup is the easiest route to Wembley. It's the easiest route to Europe as well, actually. And so I feel we threw it away a bit, really. On the other hand, you know, our first team, our first 11 haven't been performing that fantastically either last few games. So I say I can understand the reasons for it, but I would have liked to be a bit more merciless in my selection.
Okay, very good, David. I was fine with it, but David, you make a very good argument for just wanting to progress. You would probably go with a stronger side, and I understand that because you have this yearning, and I would love to see it as well. You want to see Fulham back at Wembley, and it's a strong argument, my friend. I can't disagree with you. I just was thinking about, you know, for me, what was more important? It's the league. And I also saw it, David, as a reward for all the players that have played in the other two League Cup matches. That's where I was going on. It was more of a reward for those players. I thought they earned a chance to play in this next match, even though they lost. So that's where I was going. All right. Are you ready for some questions for Ask the Co-host?
I am.
Okay. I think you're going to like this first one. Ben Lloyd, how is David after his surgery?
Well, I think I stopped the happy pills a bit too early because I've still got months and months of supply of them. You know, the ones that made the difference between my body saying I'm getting better and my mind saying no, I'm not getting better, or the other way around. So I've been playing tennis. I've been playing football. So I just won. I won this new tennis league. I mean, I actually won it. You know, my quiz team won. Everything's been winning. It's been a great success. So apart from apart from Fulham, obviously, I've got a new job, you know, work at Motspur Park right next to the training ground, travel up and down to London. Yeah, I'm so much better, obviously. I've got, next Friday, I've got my first scan. So it could all go wrong then. So they're going to scan every part of my body to see if anything else has happened in the year. So, you know, in a week's time, I could be dying again, but I don't feel like
it
at the moment.
Oh, David, let's not talk like that, my friend. Let's hope for the best.
Once you get these aneurysms, if you've got a tendency to these aneurysms, they can pop up anywhere, you know, that's the problem.
Okay.
So they're doing my brain next time as well, see if I've got a brain. They did my heart, see if I had a heart, because I was accused of not having a heart, but they did find I had one. But they're going to do my brain to see if my brain actually is there or not, or if I've just got a computer. But thanks for asking, for, you know, Ben, and I do appreciate that. But as I say, I've got a few tablets which help me sleep and things, and my sleep has been very disturbed with traveling up and down to London and things, and so I think I need to start taking them again just for a few more months just to calm me down a bit, because I've been having my ups and downs the last few weeks. Discussions about Scott Malone's beard was one random thing that I couldn't get out of my head, as you know, Russ.
It's gone, David. It's gone.
What's that? Yeah, I have to translate for you, because a tramp in America is something else, isn't it, Russ? You call it,
sure,
a tramp,
sure,
is a lady of little virtue, isn't it, rather than you call them a bum or a hobo, isn't it, I think?
Right.
But I had this fascination, right, that Scott Malone looked like a tramp, but thankfully, according to Mike, he had a shave this week.
Yes, Mike updated us on that, and I could actually see it during the match. All right, David, our friend Gary Cooper, Mr. High Noon, has a few topics. I think we only have time for a few of them. Let's start with this one. Number one, I know it's early on and nothing to worry about yet, but what does David think is attributing to our poor run of form at the minute? I think we kind of already talked about it, but we have,
Gary. I mean, for me, it's a lack of wits again at the moment, really. We're trying to play through the middle. We're trying to play little short passes and run at people. Defenses are, you know, the other team are packing their defenses. They're getting behind us. We're not using the width. We're not getting in behind the defense enough. We're not creating enough chances. Simple as that, really. I think, you know, if we could create enough chances and nothing else change, we'd be fine, because our defense is tight enough in the main to do its job. It's just getting width, getting behind teams, getting crosses in, you know, putting defenders under pressure, which we're not doing.
Okay, very good. All right, I'm going to give you a couple more. Number two, is there such a thing called the curse of the international break, as far as Fulham are concerned? Because we tend to play like crap, I'm changing one word, after them for a good few years now. He used a different term.
Which word? You changed the word crap, yeah?
I put in crap.
Oh, I'd be interested to know what word he used instead now. I'm fascinated by that. I can only think of shit, but that's kind of on the same level, really. As,
yes, David, it was.
It was? Oh, okay. I think they're pretty much on a par, really, in the UK, shit and crap. But anyway, I don't think we're a team that benefits from these things. In recent history, we've had a break, and we haven't come back from it refreshed. I mean, there's been other sort of similar cases where we've rested teams, you know, ahead of important matches, and then we've been rubbish. I can remember, you know, for example, even in the Europa League run as well, and of course the famous one where we had a fantastic result winning at Norwich on Boxing Day, and then went to Hull 2 days later, changed the team around, and got stuffed 6-0. So we just don't seem to do ourselves any favours, really, with these things. You would think international breaks would, you know, give a chance for people to refresh, but actually I hate international breaks. I really do.
I'm with you.
We never used to have them when I was a boy, you know. They hadn't been invented then. You'd have to go out and play with a couple of players short, or I think in some cases if you had enough players missing, you could ask for postponement, but they weren't automatically cancelled, the fixtures. And then, you know, that's why we have such fixture congestions and things, because of all the international breaks and stuff now. I mean, something that needs to be looked into, perhaps, because it just disrupts the momentum. Either have a winter break and play all your internationals at that time, or play all your internationals pre-season or at the end of the season. I don't know. Find some way of harmonising it, because there's always going to be winners and losers, because some leagues play a summer season and some leagues, you know, a lot of the northern European countries tend to play a summer season because it's too cold in the winter to have matches and frozen,
sure,
pitches. Where traditionally most teams, you know, us and more southern Europe, play, you know, the same winter league format. And so there's always going to be a bit of, you know, disparity. You know, we had that. I think when we played Shakhtar Donetsk, and this was maybe one of our saving graces, when we played Shakhtar Donetsk, I believe it was one of their first matches of the season, because their season had only just started.
I remember that, yeah. You're right, David.
And so, you know, I know I'm going slightly away from the topic, but in that respect, we're already up and running, and they probably weren't. And, it, you know, we got them at a good time. So in that case, it worked for us. But to find a system where, you know, international breaks and everything else can be fitted in and to be mutually benefited, it's difficult. It's a difficult ask. But I don't like them. I don't think, you know, if we've got momentum, invariably we end up losing it. And if we haven't got momentum, we still don't have momentum after it. So I don't like them, and I wish there was a way around them.
Okay. I'm going to end with Gary's trivia question for you, David. You ready for this?
Oh, I've had it now. Yep.
Who's the very first American vice president to become actual president in the next term?
In the next term? Oh, dear me.
I don't even think I know the answer to this.
I'm pretty sure John Adams was vice president to George Washington.
I think you're right, David.
Of course I am. No, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure
okay.
John Adams was George Washington's vice president, and he became, obviously, president. He was the second president of the USA.
Right. Okay, so that might be the right answer.
You have to do some verification, though.
Yes. All right. Real quick, one final topic. Stuart Ellis, in reflection, what would he define as our golden period in the last decade, and how and if can we get close to that again, David?
Golden period in the last decade. Well, the obvious choice, of course, again, is the Europa League run. Of course, that's that was a really special time for Fulham. And, you know, and although it was sandwiched between two better seasons in the league. Of course, we finished higher the season before and the season after, but we still finished, I think, a respectable 12th, which was pretty good because we played, you know, thousands of matches that year, I think. You know, we played something like 60-odd matches, I believe, that season. But for me, obviously, that was a special time. It was an unheralded period to see the things we won, the teams we beat at the Cottage and, you know, and everything else. German champions, you know, Shakhtar. Of course, Hamburg, who hosted it. Juventus, the favourites. You know, fantastic. And so that was really, in the last decade, you know, which takes us back to 2006. I mean, the season before that was pretty dire, the Great Escape season, although we ended euphorically, of course, with the Great Escape. It was a pretty bad season, you know, most of the way through until things started to click under Roy. And then after that, as I say, it's really after the Europa League final, we had the good season under Mark Hughes, and it's been all downhill ever since, so it's got to have to be the Europa League run. I can't really think of anything else.
Okay, very good there, David. All right, let's move on, and let's now talk about what the managers are saying. This is going to start our preview of the upcoming match Saturday against Bristol City. So let's start with Bristol City manager Lee Johnson. I got these quotes from the Bristol Post. So here's the title of the article. Lee Johnson calls for early goal at Fulham following Bristol City late shows. So I'm just going to read a little bit from the article and then give you the quotes along with that, my friend. Lee Johnson is urging his players to start fast against Fulham in Saturday's championship showdown at Craven Cottage. Bristol City have become adept at scoring late goals to win or draw games this season, a habit that has yielded them 8 additional points in the English second tier and earned them EFL Cup victories at Scunthorpe and Fulham. But having seen his side snatch last-minute goals in each of the last two games, City's head coach would like to see the Robins impose themselves from the very outset on their return to West London. Here is the quotes. This is from Lee Johnson. Quote, I think the challenge is we can do both. We need to play on the front foot from the start and show Fulham we have come to play. It will be interesting to see how many points we would have if you took out the last 10 minutes of all of our games, but I might work out that out at some point. At the same time, it would be nice to score a goal in the first 10 minutes. City have come from behind to win a draw on 5 occasions already this season, and Johnson attributes this newfound ability to bounce back from adversity to a variety of factors. Here's another quote. It's great for the fans that we are still in every game, even if we are one or two down with 20 minutes to go, because they know we're going to come good, and that keeps their spirits up. It is a positive trait, and it is probably down to character, youth, fitness, and grinding the opposition down the way we like to play. Tactically, our substitutions have gone really well because we have options and stronger bench, but we need to start games better. It is great to have the clubs in your bag to be able to bring people on and change a game, which is something the club did not have last year. That has been a big plus for us at the end of games, and we now need to work towards dominating for 90 minutes. Then he goes along. It will be two changes about the upcoming match. It will be two change sides playing in front of a much bigger crowd in a league game which always brings a completely different dynamic and more intensity as far as the pressure is concerned. And then the final quotes, we've had two last-minute winners. The players are in credit with the fans, and we want to make sure we send them home happy again. But we have to be careful because we'll have that little edge, talking about Fulham, that says you're not coming back on our patch and doing what you did to us in the last two games. We have to guard against that, and we have to be physical so we can play on the front foot. I find that interesting that he talks about playing physical. David, what stands out to you from the comments from Lee Johnson?
Well, what stands out for me is that his supposed tactics are almost probably the opposite to what he should be doing to nullify us, you know, rather than coming at us on the front foot, but sitting back and frustrating us is what's worked for everyone else lately. So it's surprising that, you know, a bit of bluff and bluster there, maybe he's going to do exactly the opposite of what he said. I don't know. You know, but maybe he thinks he can come and take the game to us, but you know that could be playing into our hands. So I'm not so sure whether this is just, as I say, a bit of sort of bravado or speaking, you know, saying we're going to come out and, you know, give them a good game when in fact they're going to sit and nullify us and catch us on a break.
Okay, very good there, David. You know, it's interesting because when I've read these comments from the managers, I'm thinking, are they just saying that to get it out in the open and basically have Slavisa think about, well, this is going to be the approach, and then have a completely different approach? It'll be interesting to see if he backs up these words, and this is how they play, that they're going to come at Fulham. I think if that's the case, if that's his game plan, that plays in the Fulham's hands. So I hope that they do come to Fulham wanting to play, because I think that would be to our advantage, David. All right, let's now move on to Slavisa. Here's some quotes from Slavisa. He's talking, obviously, about the last match and the match coming up, so I'm just going to read you some quotes. First, talking about the last match. We didn't mark our territory on our field, and it's another chance in front of us. We didn't score the goal when we created chances. They did. We wanted to progress in the competition, but now we are out. Now another chance is in front of us, and we have to try and improve. We have to be proud, and we have to mark our territory. The best therapy is to play the next game, and in our hands is the possibility and opportunity to fix some of the problems we found in the cup game. I believe we are ready. We expect this is going to be a different game. We expect we're going to find a different result, and we're ready to fight for 3 points. I'm not looking at the table in the third week in September talking about the current situation in the championship. I don't believe you can be a relegated or promoted team on this date. I'm focused, and the only thing I'm interested in is ready for the fight and try to find a solution to win the game that is in front of us. We're going to start thinking about the table in some months that are in front of us now. It's normal that we want to be at the top, but if someone is at the top or the bottom of the league in the moment, it's not definitely where they'll be at the end of the season. In front of us are 114 points to fight for. In front of us is a chance to fight for 3 points immediately, and this is my objective. I don't observe the table so much at this moment. All right, and then here's some final quotes for David. And while Jokanovic's men, I'm sorry, this isn't a quote, this is from the article, may have only scored two more at the other end, he's confident that their numbers will improve if they keep faith with their philosophies. These are now further quotes from Slavisa. Quote, the glass is half empty or it's half full, depending on how you want to observe the situation. I believe my team has made many important things in the start of this stage. We conceded less goals compared to what we conceded in the past. We have a style of how we want to play football. We're missing some goals, but we believe if we follow our way, we're going to create the chances and we're going to score goals in the next games. Okay, David, what stands out to you from what Slavisa shared? And you can actually read this on the Fulham website.
Actually, I preferred Gary Johnson's, I think, or Lee Johnson, sorry. I think his was more direct and, you know, filled more with passion. I think Slavisa's is a bit wet there, really. I don't know if I quite share his opinion there that, you know, we're doing things the right way. I don't think they are doing things the right way. Yes, there have been improvements, most certainly. I mean, the defence is better than last season, but that's hardly really, you know, a high watermark, is it? You know, it couldn't have been much worse. It really couldn't. You know, we have improved upon that most certainly so far. But at the price of not scoring goals, kind of, perhaps, with the change in players and personnel, I think if we were creating lots of chances and, you know, not putting them away because of bad finishing, bad luck, good goalkeeping, I'd be much happier, much more optimistic than I am now. But we're not creating the chances. Look at our, can you tell me in the last few games how many chances have we scored? How many shots on target have we had? Because I know it's been pretty low.
It's been pretty low, David. I don't have that stat at my fingertips, but it is low, David. You're right about that.
That's the worrying thing. It's not about, you know, putting it away. It's about creating the chances, and we're not troubling.
I agree with you, David. I totally agree.
He's found out at the moment, and he's talking about he's happy with the system. The system hasn't worked the last few games. Simple as that. You know, the games I have seen, and I haven't seen them all. It's been pretty disappointing, and you know we had to rely on, you know, although, you know, we've had some wins away from home, we've had to rely a couple of times on, you know, on last-ditch goals to save us. We really have. You know, Burton Albion, the epitome of that, really. Burton Albion, a last-minute goal injury time, basically, to save us against them. You know, that's pretty poor. And, of course, you do get these results. You know, we're going to have matches. Any season, you're going to have matches where, you know, you steamroller someone pretty good. And you struggle against someone perhaps perceivably not so good. That's going to happen. These things balance out. But at the moment, no. It's the things aren't really balancing out. It's not bad luck. It's not bad finishing. It's not creating the chances. And that's, you know, that's what's worrying me. And if this doesn't get sorted soon, then, you know, the season will be over. And I'm Mike fully pulling his hair out now. I know he has his charts, but but in the same vein, the charts don't lie either. Yeah, they've been pretty accurate. And,
yeah,
you know how many points you need to have. And Mike was saying, you know, last year, pretty early on, you know, we need to be the best team in the league from where we were to get into the playoffs, literally. And that would come. You know, that point will come again. And there's a points target where we need to be. You know, there's a level we need to be at. And if we start falling behind that and we're not scoring goals, then it's going to be very difficult to get back. So I think, you know, Slavica is perhaps, he's looking at it too simplistically, thinking or hoping it's all just going to fall into place. Maybe it will, but I don't think it will. I think we need to change something around.
Okay, and you know what, David? I agree with you, but, you know, we're not the full manager. This is his job, and we'll have to see what he does, but something needs to change, I think. But we'll see what he does tomorrow. Tomorrow, maybe we'll see some kind of change. I hope we do. I hope we do. All right. All right, David, listen, we are running a little late here, so why don't you drop off the line, and while you do, we'll go about an additional 10 minutes. Why don't you drop off the line, and while you do, I'm going to just read some predictions from the Fulham supporters. Sound good?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, very good. All right. David will be right back in 2 seconds. While we do that, I'm just going to read some predictions that were on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Ben Reed has 2-0 to Fulham. Andy Newland has 1-1. Gary Cooper says, very hard to say we could come out and play like we did pre-international break and destroy City, but in current form, I only see a 1-1 draw. Alan Freestone has 3-0. John Wright says 1-0 to Fulham. Ryan Felix says Fulham win 3-0. Simon Haneed, 2-1 Fulham. Rob Murphy, 1-0. Chris Davidson, a comfortable win for Fulham this time out, which will hopefully put on the whole the negativity creeping in from some of the more impatient fans' very short memories. Alex Westenberger says 1-1. Martin Atkins says 2-1 to Fulham. Set things up nicely for best-of-three decider at Ashton Gate. Okay. And I'll just read one more. Colm Bugler, 3-2 to Fulham with a Chris Martin hat trick. Just for David. Very interesting. David will enjoy that. All right, David. I'm now going to share some information to you from whoscored.com just to start with our preview, and then I'll get your thoughts on your key players. Let's start with the basic information from who scored, and that's where we are at the table. Fulham are ninth. We have 3 victories, 4 draws, 1 loss, 8 goals scored, 6 conceded. We're on a +2 goal differential, and we're on 13 points. Bristol City are currently 12th. They have 3 victories, 2 draws, 3 losses, They've actually scored 12. They've given up 11. They're on a plus one goal differential, and they're on 11 points. Okay, so now some information from WhoScored.com on tell you a little bit about them. Bristol City strengths, attacking set pieces, coming back from losing positions, defending set pieces very strong, creating scoring chances, creating chances using through balls, shooting from direct free kicks, strong. Weaknesses, defending against attacks down the wings, weak. Defending against long shots, defending against through ball attacks, protecting the lead and avoiding individual errors, all very weak. Their style, possession football, control the game in the opposition's half, attack through the middle, take a lot of shots, non-aggressive, opponents play aggressively against them. WhoScored.com is actually predicting a 1-1 draw, David. And real quick, I'm going to give you a stats comparison because I think it'll definitely help you with our preview here. So let's start with possession. Currently in the league, Fulham are second at 57.6%. Bristol City are fifth at 52.6. Shots, Fulham are 12th with 13 per game. Bristol City, David, are first with 16.9. Passing success, Fulham are first with 85.3. Bristol City are 12th with 75.3. Aerials, one, Fulham are 22nd in the league at 17.9. Bristol City are 9th with 20.9. Okay, now we're going to some more passing stats. Crosses per game, Fulham are even with Bristol City at 22. Through balls per game, Fulham are first in the league with 3 per game. Bristol City are currently 23rd with 0 per game. Long balls, Fulham are 24th in the league at 67. Bristol City are 3rd in the league with 88. Short passes, Fulham are still first in the league with 488 short passes per game, and Bristol City are 12th with 330. All right, David, before I get your key players, what stands out to you from the information I shared to you from WhoScored.com?
I'm a bit worried, actually, because you said Bristol City are weak down the wings and things like that, but we're not going to trouble them too much, and they're weak from long shots. We don't like taking long shots either. So could be quite difficult if that is the case, really. The incredible thing is we're bottom of the league when it comes to long balls. I'm not really surprised by that because when Matt Smith isn't been in the team, that you know when he's in the team, you get the occasional hoof up to him, but he hasn't been in the team so much recently. And when you look at this, is you know the problem we have with Parker and McDonald. They both like to play this kind of short ball football. And that's why
right.
Our possession is so high and our long balls are so low because there aren't any. And you know, we're not seeing any long passes hit and because the defense, everyone's getting their defense behind us. So it completely, you know, the stats aren't lying here, I think. You know, the stats have been very reflective about the style of play that we have. You know, the few times we try and get forward, it's generally people running with the ball at defenders and then either, you know, being dispossessed, occasionally getting past them or turning backwards and going back again, keeping the possession up. But there isn't a long ball in the team. I haven't seen McDonald play really one successful, brilliant long pass yet. I haven't really seen anyone do that. And that's what we're certainly missing, long through balls. If we've got players with pace, we need to be getting these early passes in behind other teams, which we're not doing. Or even, you know, a little bit over the top, long balls over the top. The sort that you get to Matt Smith. We don't want to see the whole game dominated by that, but I think to use that, you know, now and then is also part of your armoury, and you should be doing that. But you can see how predictable and one-dimensional our attacking really is because, you know, it's all from short passing and trying to keep possession, and it's pretty static, really.
No, very good point, David. And when we talk about the starting 11, I'm going to get your starting 11. I'm also going to share Mike's, and I'm going to chime in as well because Mike brings up a few names of players that I think could potentially help with the issues you're talking about with potential long ball passes. But I would say more, you know, not long ball passes like up to Matt Smith, but I'm talking about similar to what Jamie O'Hara would do. You know, Jamie O'Hara had his faults, but one of his positives was his ability to really pass the ball well, you know, to the wings. And I actually watched in the last match someone do that same thing, but also had the ability to really run with pace. So I'll mention that when we get to the starting 11. But let's now go to who are your key players tomorrow, David? Who are your key players and what do Fulham need to do to win the match? We're going to combine the two.
Well, this is a really tough one for me because I think it's partly the same me and my depressive mood this week. I'm very tired and need a few happy pills maybe, but I just can't see us cutting it tomorrow with this thing. I can't see how in my head resolving how this system is suddenly going to click and we're suddenly going to start working with that. But so I don't know if we do have a key player. I fear more of the same, unfortunately, more of what we've seen lately, which is, you know, very disappointing football, really. I still think Scott Parker's going to be involved, much as there's been all this talk. And I do agree that there's something not quite right with him and McDonald being there. But I think Scott Parker in the middle of the park, really, to do his sort of captaincy-type role is what I would be most expecting. Because the more attacking players, I think you know, most teams have marked their cards and they really know how to nullify them. So we need Scott Parker in the middle to really drive the team forward in one of those performances we see now and then where it just adds impetus to everything and everyone plays with a little bit more urgency. And so I'm hoping Scott Parker can do that tomorrow.
Okay, very good, David. It's funny because I totally see the value of Scott Parker. I'm just not sure about playing Parker and McDonald together. And I know you have concerns about that as well. I see their value. I see both players' value, but they're similar type of player. Maybe you need a player that's a little bit different. So that's going to lead me to ask you for your starting 11. Not what Slavis is going to do. You already said you feel strongly that he's going to play, say, Parker and McDonald, I'm assuming. But if you were Slavis, what would be your starting 11?
Well, we are hampered, unfortunately, by the fact that that we've lost, Callas tomorrow. Otherwise, I would really be thinking about going with the
3-5-2.
With the three at the back. But otherwise, I mean, I've got no reason to change the goalkeeper, really. You know, we haven't been conceding many goals. We haven't had any real sort of issues with anyone who's played in the defence, not particularly so. The last place you want us to be start messing around is the defence. Obviously, I think the centre-backs will be Sigurdsson and Maddo. I think that's pretty much going to be accepted. I'm sure we're going to see Odoi continue because there isn't, again, not a lot of option really at the moment there. Left-back, it's always a toss-up between one or the other. And that's difficult. It really is difficult. But I think on the basis that we need to inject a bit of pace and something, you know, let's give Sessegnon on the go.
Okay.
Malone is no slouch either, but I think Sessegnon perhaps, you know, he does have a little bit of more option to get forward and get behind the other side. And so let's go with him. Centre midfield, we're stuck, until we change the system, we're stuck with the Parker McDonald axis, I think. We have a lot of choice with that. You could play in any two out of about five, if you include LBC, Tunnicliffe, and Johansson, but I'm not sure if any combination is actually better than the one we have, not that it's perfect. Chris Mine up front, we brought him in to be a striker and score goals, so I have him in there. And the three behind, and I agree with, and I have seen what Mike said. Mike has suggested leaving out Tom Kearney completely, which is quite a radical move, but I can understand that. But for me personally, I would keep Kearney in there, but I'd keep him central. And on this occasion, I think I'd have, I'd probably have Aluku and Cabana as the wide people initially. I mean, Yozabed, I think he was quite impressive last time, but it's hard to fit him in the team if you're playing Kearney there. I mean,
right,
we'll probably see Slavica stick Kearney out wide again and Hozabed in the middle if he's going to do that. You know, the only other way to get around that is to be really radical and to put Hozabed as instead of one of Parker or McDonald, but I don't think he's going to do that yet. So let's try Kearney in the middle. Aluka and Cabana as the wide men with Martin up front there. And then let's hope that Callis is back soon and we're able to experiment with three at the back again.
Okay, very good, David. All right. I'm going to share Mike's starting 11 that he actually shared with us with the Cutter's Talk co-host. We have a group message that goes back and forth, and I asked Mike, be okay to share this because I found it interesting. He goes with Butt now he has Odoi. This is earlier, so he did have Cal, so I can assume Mike would say Maddle and Sigurdsson. This is where it gets interesting. Sessegnon, he has McDonald and Johansson, and then he has Yothabed, like you said, instead of Kearney, Aluko, Martin, and Cabano. So he I mean, I find it interesting that he's including Johansson, which I actually agree with. Based on what I watched in the last match, I think he deserves an opportunity. And I don't know if Savic is going to give him another opportunity very quickly since it was Wednesday, but if I was calling the shots, I would play him along with McDonald or Parker. I would set one of those guys out, David, and I would play Johansson. But I found it interesting that Mike had Kearney out and had Yothabed in his place. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's a situation where Kearney is frustrating to a point that, you know, Mike, I picked up on this lately that, you know, Kearney doesn't use his right foot at all. The play can be, again, with Kearney, a bit predictable, and that maybe Yothabed will offer something slightly more varied there. But I think if you're talking about playing Kearney in a central position, that overcomes a lot of the issues. Playing him in the wide position is not ideal.
It's a waste, David.
He's not a wide player.
David, it's a waste.
Really good.
Yeah.
He doesn't get back and help, does he? He doesn't get back and help. So, I think if you're going to play Kearney, do play him in the middle, certainly. But I think if anything, it's just, look, Mike's trying to think outside the box here. If I'm,
trying to
predict Mike's mindset and do something that the opposition maybe don't expect. The opposition have got a game plan to nullify Kearney because they know he's one of the dangerous players we have. Don't play him to make them change. But obviously, to do that, to call their bluff, you then need to have someone to come in who's going to do a good job. And you know, has Hozabed settled enough yet in this league? Has he demonstrated that he is capable of, like, you know, doing what Kearney does? I'm not so sure. So it's sort of sometimes a case of making change for change's sake, to try and, you know, try and be different. Sometimes you've got to stick with what you know. And the same goes for, really, you know, let's say, fine, bring in Johansson alongside McDonald. Great, try something different. But do we know it would be better? Scott Parker's a very hard man to replace. He really is, as I said, for all the reasons I
agree
before.
David.
Do we know Johansson can do that? I don't know. Yes, it would be great to see, but, is it time to experiment with that, or is it time to experiment with actually changing the system rather than changing the personnel?
Interesting. I see where you're going on that, David, because we're talking about changing the players, but I could tell you really want to change the system, which I'm not against either. Something needs to change, or it needs to click. You know, something needs to happen soon, and let's hope it happens in this match, that things come together. All right, and it's funny because if it was me, I would have Kearney. I would still include Tom Kearney. I think you should be building a team around Tom Kearney, but he needs to be central. Luco on one side and Cabano on the other and Chris Martin up front. That's what I would do. All right, let's now go to predictions to wrap up this show. The Cutter's Talk Twitter page, 170 votes. Win was 54%, David. Draw was 26%, and loss was 20%. All right, David, we have to wrap up this show. I want your prediction, my friend. What's your prediction? I have a feeling it's not going to be a positive one. Am I right?
Well, I clicked on loss, but my fat fingers, even though they're not very fat, clicked on draw, so I'm not sure what I'm predicting there, really. So what do we count that one as, then?
I don't know, David.
Not me neither. My gut feeling was a disappointing, like last season where they turned us over 2-1. Thanks for reminding me, Emilio. I remember that one. But I fear the same can happen again, something like that, a 2-1. But a draw, not very satisfactory really either, but better than that. But really, we need to win. So, I'm going back to my old losing 2-1. We win always round because either I'm going to be right or perhaps we can win and then I'll be wrong, but I'll be happy anyway.
Okay. All right. All right, David. I'm not feeling as negative as you. I actually think that we're going to win, and we're going to win convincingly. I do. I'm actually very positive about this. I cannot picture Bristol City coming to Craven Cottage and winning twice. In fact, I think Savisa, I just have this gut feeling he is going to change things up a little bit. That's my gut feeling is he's going to do something a little bit different, and I think I'm going to be happy with it. And I think Fulham are going to win. And I think Fulham are going to win 3-1. I'm not going 2-1. I'm going 3-1. And I'm going to have, say, scoring goals. I'm going to go with Cabano, Chris Martin, and I'm going to say Tom Kearney because I think Tom Kearney's going to play. So that's what I'm going to go with. I'm going to say 3-1, David.
Well, we tried that last week when we was up against Adam bloody Bogdan in goal and Dan Byrne.
I know.
Didn't work, so.
No, it didn't work.
I'm not sure. You know, I think you got as much chance of Gwyneth Paltrow scoring as Chris Martin at the moment.
Oh,
so.
Boy, David. Bad humour.
So I'm not sure. I hope you're right, Russ, I do, but if we couldn't do it last week against Wigan, I'm not sure we can do it this week against Bristol City.
Okay. Well, part of the reason why I'm thinking they're going to win, David, is that I think, you know, again, maybe I'm buying into the quotes from Lee Johnson, but I think they're going to come to play, and I think that's going to work right into our strengths, and I think that's going to help us, and that's why I think we're going to win this match. I think part of it is going to be the tactical decisions that Lee Johnson makes. And listen, he could be completely fooling us, and then he could be sitting back and beating us on the break and really frustrating us, and that would blow my prediction sky high. But I just got this feeling that Savisa is going to be changing things up. I could be wrong. So that's part of the reason why I'm going with 3-1. All right, David, we have to wrap up the show. Any final thoughts before we go, my friend?
I did actually Google the presidents, and yes, John Adams was officially the first vice president of the USA, and of course the
good
second
call,
president.
Good call, David. Good call.
So I guess I was right again. So,
David Holly, right again?
I enjoyed the question. And you know, people listening want to, you know, divert off the topic briefly and throwing a random sort of question. I'll. Always interested to hear these things. There was a very interesting one we had the other day actually in a quiz that you had to name the second player ever in British football to get a red card. Do you any idea who that was, Russ?
No.
It was actually George Best playing for Fulham.
Wow.
And that happened on the same day. There was two red cards. There was the same in another match, someone else, and I can't remember his name now, but he got the red card minutes before, literally. So George Best was the second player ever to get a red card and playing for Fulham at the time.
Okay, very, very good trivia, David. Thank you for sharing that. All right, my friend, we definitely have to wrap up this show. Great show. Great job, David. Great job. I enjoy doing these Friday shows with you. It has been a lot of fun. It's funny because when I was reading Savisa's quotes, he talked about, you know, glass half full, glass half empty. That's basically us. That's basically me and you. So maybe, just maybe, Savisa's listening. Probably not. But, you know, you never know. You never know.
Well, if we get a random trivia question next week about Serbia from a strange named person, then I might start worrying that might be true, yeah?
Very good point, my friend. Listen, we have to go. So I'm going to wrap this up. For David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Have a good night, my friend. Great show.
Thanks. Good night, Russ. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Good night, David.